how'd you get over the hump in the beginning? Like you mentioned to me before that you were pretty like sore and stuff in the beginning.
Oh yeah.
What do you think kept you going back? Like, what did you maybe like about it?
If you have a wrestling background, or maybe if you're just really gifted when it comes to movement, maybe it'll click for you in 3, 4, 5 months. But I think it took me over a year for like the movement for stuff to like click well. Did you feel relaxed when you first started picking up running? Like seriously picking up running? Were you pretty relaxed? How long did it take you to become a more relaxed runner?
It takes a while to like, you know, relax while you're running. Especially when you're going like long, like a longer distance and you're trying to run continuously.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, my approach in the beginning was to like try to mitigate a lot of that. So I only ran for real short periods of time. If you can't think about the form and the technique and what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to execute it for all 5 sets of 5, the weight's too heavy.
Yeah.
Normally what happens is you get that weight on your back and go, oh fuck, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do 5 reps. And then you're not sure if you can get through the next set, the next set, the next set. And you're just kind of crapping your pants the whole time rather than being able to do a coordinated effort with a good squat. You know, there's plenty of reasons to quit. There's plenty of reasons to stop because you don't get better at it right away. Mm-hmm. And it does take a lot of work. Fuck, man. I mean, I remember being out on like many runs and just being like, man, I still can't breathe that good. Are you serious? Like, this is crazy.
Are you actually on like TRT though? What would be the point though? I mean, because men's hormone levels dip as they get older.
No, they don't.
No,
because you guys say that.
When you are a kid, you don't really understand how some things do work. And as an adult, you've already learned how to learn.
So it's not that you need to exert more force, especially.
You need to get madder.
You get madder.
Yeah, get super mad.
Just fucking that. Hulk out, bro. You know what I mean? Pat Project family, we talk about sleep all the time on this podcast, as you know. That's why we've partnered with 8 Sleep Mattresses. And the amazing thing about 8 Sleep Mattresses, and one of the reasons why they are nicknamed the Tesla of beds, is because of the technology behind the Pod Pro cover. Not only does it literally change its temperature through the night, first off, it can go from 55 degrees all the way to 110, but the temperature changes through the night based off your own body temperature. It also tracks your heart rate variability, your tossing and turning, your partner's tossing and turning. And based off of that, in consecutive nights, it will literally change the temperature settings so that you get better quality sleep on different nights. It blows my mind at how great these mattresses are. So, Andrew, tell them how to get it, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other cool thing too is like the app will actually, you know, you track everything through the app, but then it'll send you messages like, hey, do you feel more rested today? Well, that's no surprise because, you know, it gives you all the information. And yeah, it's just really cool like to be able to track that sort of thing. So that way, you know, like, you know, you can't get better at something you're not tracking, and it does it for you. So head over to 8sleep.com/powerproject. That's 8 spelled out. So EIGHT sleep.com/powerproject. And you will automatically receive $150 off of the Pod Pro cover or the Pod Pro cover and mattress combo. Again, no code for that. You guys will get that automatically. Links to them down in the description as well as the podcast show notes.
You're very smiley today. Did you have sex today or something? What's going on?
He had Kurt Cumin.
I will be with my girlfriend.
Not with me or Andrew?
No.
I'm insulted.
That sounded so fake.
That sounded forced.
Yeah. No, it's like... you know, like when the fucking, like the loner kid is just like, oh, I have sex with my girlfriend.
Every day, every hour.
Yeah.
My girlfriend in Canada.
Right. Exactly.
I swear she exists, guys.
I've never seen your girlfriend before. That's weird.
She's real. Yeah. She just doesn't come around a lot.
Yeah, she's way up there in Canada.
She's shy.
She's shy. In SEMA.
Oh, what's up, man?
Dude, you got a brown belt.
Oh, yeah.
What's after the brown belt?
Black.
Oh, my God.
Isn't it just make sense that black is the highest belt?
It's like the only case where black is good, right?
You fucker.
Well, oh, darkness and everything. What are you thinking of? What are you talking about?
Yeah, because...
Well, I mean, the brown belt, I am actually brown. Uh-huh. We're talking technically. So, oh, okay. You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, like, what does it start off with?
Well, like in...
White belt.
A white belt. Oh, I see.
In chess, right, if you have the white pieces, you go first. Mm. And so everybody strives for the white. pieces.
Is that over to the dark side?
And then when they, yeah.
Is it always good to have the first move?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think so.
You know, I don't know anything about chess other than that one simple fucking
white goes first. Oh, yeah.
Dude, what's that like?
It's really
is there
cool.
like a big ceremony or something, a big parade?
Yeah, no, there isn't. Casio does promotions typically twice a year, so yeah, it was really dope though. It was really dope. One thing that I find kind of interesting is I was talking to you about this, and I mentioned it to another guy I roll with who's a black belt. His name's Neho, but I think there's a mental aspect to when people see belts. I think it's
because you actually wear it in practice, right?
You wear it, right? Yeah, and I think people put a level of like skill to like even if you're not thinking about it. When you see a black belt, right, you're like, oh, they're skilled. When you see a brown belt, you're like, ooh. And when you see a purple belt, you're like, oh. When you see a blue belt, you're like, oh. When you see a white belt, you're like, ha ha. You know? And I think because as I've been rolling with people,
you go through those expressions again? I was pretty.
I don't know if the camera caught it, but I think like. You know, people talk about like different belt powers or whatever. I think that there's a legitimate aspect to it because it's the way other people now start viewing you because of the belt you have on your waist. So someone, if you were a blue belt, but now you're a purple belt, they're going to come at you differently because they see that belt. So they might be a little bit more timid or scared to try things on you because they're like, oh, he's a purple belt, he'll know. And I think that's with brown belt because when I rolled with some people after getting the brown belt, nothing new happened, but it's just like, it's like some of the roles feel as if they've gotten easier. And I think even if they're not thinking about it, there's a mental aspect to the way people look at belts. And I think that there's something that you should try not to pay attention to the belt that somebody has on their waist. Because if you zone in on that too much, it's really going to affect the way you move versus that person. Like I see it when people roll with black belts. They'll roll with a purple belt very differently from how they're going to approach a black belt because they're more scared, more timid. It's like, I know I noticed it when I used to roll with Casio in the past. When I'd roll with Casio, I wouldn't be as loose as when I'd roll with other guys because like he's a black belt and he's Casio. So I'd be more timid. But I think that's something that you want to try to drop.
Is there maybe like a respect level from the other person too, where I don't know they I don't know because they're respecting you they're like kind of messing up and they're also I don't know they maybe don't want to go so hard because then they're scared that you might go all the way right.
There are those aspects. Yeah, there's so many things that are at play in that.
Like if I really go hard on him, he's going to like put me in my place. So I'm just going to kind of roll and try to chill and like try to kind of hide under this rock and just pretend that I don't have any skills so he doesn't kill me.
It's kind of funny because there's something in jiu-jitsu called flow rolling. So some people would be like, okay, let's flow roll this round. So that means let's take it light. But I've rolled with a few people where like, they're like, let's flow roll. And then they really turn it on. And then I'm just like, you shouldn't have done that. Like you said, keep it flow. Don't come at me like that.
I think
that.
I told you I did that with, I did it with Mark Henry and I did it with Bobby Lashley. And they told me no beforehand. And I was like, oh, I just want to see, you know. And Mark Henry just did it with my hand.
And what did he do?
He just shook my hand. He's like, what's up, player? And he like shook my hand. And I said, hey, like, I said, you know, because in wrestling, you shake hands like this. Like it's always
why
super,
so soft.
It's just super light. I don't know if they still do it, but it was like a thing of like, you're not trying to like big dog each other, you know, you're not trying to like put her here and like, you know.
But why did they start doing that? That's really interesting that they do that in wrestling. Why did, do you know why they, that's a thing?
They did that. They do that to kind of show that they're like already in the business. Like they already know, like if you know, then you know, and you shake each other's hands softly. Like you're not trying to shake the Undertaker's hand hard. You're not trying to shake Stone Cold Steve Austin's hand like hard.
No.
What it used to mean is like the guy's going to stiff you in the ring, you know? So if someone, you know, if a rookie guy, someone who's green shakes someone's hand hard, they're going to get fucking punched in the face in the ring.
Oh,
they're going to get kind of like, you know, taken care of, so to speak. So, I don't know. I don't remember where I was going.
Mark Henry shook your hand.
Oh, yeah. Mark Henry. Yeah. Mark Henry. We shook my hand real light and I was like, oh, come on, just give me like a, I just kind of want to see. And he's like, this is world's strongest man power. He's like, I don't think so. I was like, come on, man. And he squeezed my hand. And it, like, he just turned my hand into like a tiny hand. Like my fingers got squished really bad, even though we were locked all the way in. And he's like, that's about three quarters power.
That's crazy that you guys were locked all the way in, though.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just crushed the whole thing. I was like, holy fuck.
Was his hand substantially bigger than yours, too?
Oh, his hands are massive. Yeah.
Makes sense. I would, I'm thinking, like, with the belts, it's sort of just like the pecking order. You know, it's like, I don't know, Mark, like, if you're in the gym and you have your bench that you like, you know, not that you even would do this, but like nobody's going to go to that bench or whatever, right. You know what I mean? Just out of like the respect side of things. Mm-hmm. So I think there has something to do with that. And then like the mental side of things, you know, like no one's going to just jump in on your workout just because, you know, like.
Even though you want them to probably, you probably want them to be like you probably want someone to like fucking kind of step to you a bit, right?
Yes. But this is the thing. I think that there's a psychological thing that I think you can really get rid of, but it implants when I've been thinking about this a lot. It implants when you're a white belt, when you start rolling with people. Cause when you're a white belt, you see everybody's different belts. You see the blue belts, you see the purple belts, you see the brown and the black belts, and you attribute different levels of importance and skill and potential fear when you approach to roll with one of them. So you know that when you roll with a blue belt, you're like, you know, they're okay. You roll with a purple belt, you're like, ooh, okay, let's whatever. You roll with the brown belt, you're like, oh fuck. You roll with the black belt, you're like, I'm fucked, right? Now, if you never get rid of the way you look at people's belts, you're perpetually going to be somewhat scared of purple belts, really scared of brown belts, and then really fearful of a black belt. And if you never let that go, as you progress through the belts, you're still going to have this thing in the back of your head when you see a belt. And you're not going to even be thinking about it. But when you see a belt on somebody's waist, you're going to automatically think, they're so much better than me, rather than approaching them as you would approach anybody else, which is what I think that you should try to do when you're rolling. You should approach the black belt the way you would approach somebody else, because then you're letting all of your skill out.
You could do the same thing with a school. You heard that somebody's from this particular school that has a bunch of people that are wrecking machines, right? And you just associate this one guy with that school, and maybe your school is better than their school. You don't have any idea. Mm-hmm. You don't even know it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like there's like Gordon Ryan, you know, he's the best no-gi grappler. But I think an aspect of why he's so good is, number one, his technique is really fucking amazing. But he truly has been able to instill fear in all of these other grapplers worldwide because of how he approaches things, not just on social media. Mm-hmm. But like he's a nightmare to have a match with, because he will trash talk and ragdoll you through social media before you guys are actually going to roll. Mm. And he's done that with all of them. And then he's beat them too. So now when people are like, oh, I have to roll against Gordon, there's this already like this discomfort because of what he instills. And I think certain belts have instilled that on people too. You know, I think you can get rid of that, but yeah, it's
do you
it's
have
weird.
Some guys that are lower belts right now that that surprise you, that do pretty good against you, where you're like, fuck, that was actually like, you know, that was pretty intense, you know, and you maybe had to rely on some stuff that you didn't even think you needed to rely on.
I have some good roles with lower belts, like blue belts and purple belts. I have good roles.
Do you think those guys are maybe a little more relaxed, or they just know you more, or?
I think there's, okay, so. Also, being my size, there's a thing in jiu-jitsu where like people think that when they roll with bigger individuals that they're automatically gonna like get really just stomped or hurt or whatever, right? So there are people, know I'm not gonna hurt them, right? But there are some people who like they'll really roll comfortably because they know, okay, I'm gonna be safe rolling with Nsema, right? And there's some people that just don't roll with me. But I've been able to go over to this school in San Jose that has a few people. I actually went there with Allah and Jason, and rolled with Jason Kalipa down there. It's Kyle Terra in San Jose. And there's a lot of like strong, big black belts, and especially no-gi. I got fucked up in no-gi, which was great to feel. I haven't been able to roll with some of them in the gi, but those guys, they compete at a high level, and they roll at a very high level. So there I'm able to kind of let loose a bit more. I'm able to do that with some people here, but I generally don't because it's a lot of weight moving around, and it's, you know, everyone has to be safe. Everyone
I would think if you were lower, I would think if you were lower level belt, that it would be encouraging to go with you because, you like to work out of bad positions and stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it would be, I mean, I don't know if the guys think that they're getting something on you, or they think they're about to get something on you and they're surprised because you're you're who you are, and they are well aware of who you are in your mm-hmm. school. But I would find that encouraging. Like, wow, I'm surprised that I even got even remotely close to anything that I didn't even think I was going to be able to do anything. But meanwhile, you kind of gave me your arm or gave me your back or something like that because you wanted to train that.
Yeah, no, that happens quite a bit. And that's how I usually train with lower belts. But I think like when I was a blue belt and even when I was a white belt, if you're a white belt, you can't necessarily ask brown belts to roll. You can actually, but like it's not done as often. But when I was a white belt,
it's like kind of disrespectful in the school or something.
Black belt
like
specifically, like yeah. you if you're a white belt, you don't necessarily like point out a black belt and say, hey, do you want to roll? Like you usually let them ask you. But when I was a white belt, I was always trying to roll with upper belts because like I knew that's how I'd get my best rolls. That's how I'd learn the most because they'd fuck me up so bad and I'd always be able to ask them questions on like,
but probably safely as well.
Oh yeah, definitely.
The other white belt, right?
Oh, white belts aren't allowed to wear white belts with Cassius.
Oh, I see.
But other schools, they let white belts roll with other white belts. But I think it's smart what Cassius has done because when a white belt rolls with a white belt, it's two people that are new and they don't know where to stop. They don't know like when something's actually being put on that's unsafe. So white belts tend to hurt each other. Mm. And you know, there's the white belt spazziness that people got to be careful with. Cause
like I've only done jiu-jitsu a handful of times and I legitimately don't even know when to have someone on hold.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, do this. And then I'm like, oh, I'm like, I have someone in an arm bar. And then I have no idea how much pressure to apply.
Yeah.
I mean, even though I've been in a couple myself, I'm not sure like, you know, I mean, I know to, if the guy taps, I know to let go, but I'm not sure. Like, they're like, oh, extend your hips. I'm like, how far? Like, I'm going to rip this guy's fucking arm out of socket. Like, what's the deal here? And then it depends on the person too, right?
Yeah, it does depend on the person. But like, that's the thing. When I was a white belt, when I was a blue belt, and purple belt, absolutely, I would always try to roll with the best people I could. And I think maybe it was easier for me because I was big. So like I stopped early trying to really power through things. But I would always try to roll with like guys who I knew would fuck me up. And I think for some people, they don't necessarily purposefully do that. They don't try to roll with the person that's really going to mess them up because they're scared of getting fucked up. And that's the only way you're going to really get better. So that's partially why some people don't want to roll with me because they know how many times they're going to get tapped. Mm. But when I roll with people, I've always tried to roll with the person that I knew would tap me the most. That's the person I want to roll with as many times as I possibly could during practice because I knew I'm going to learn the most from the guy who's going to really mess me up as in hurt me, but tap me because then I'd be able to ask, what do I do? And I think within jiu-jitsu, you're going to be able to progress faster if you seek out the people that are going to tap you the most, not if you seek out the people that you know you're going to beat up.
Do you think it's a game of like not getting tapped, or is it's a game of like you? I understand it's a defensive game in some way, like the nature of it, but it's more like you should be on the offense, right?
Not all. Well, it depends on what
you're like. If we're going against each other,
yeah,
and it's a match, then I want to try to win. I don't want to try to just not lose.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I might feel your skill level right away and be like, I just need to fucking survive. This is going to be embarrassing.
Yeah.
So there's that factor. But if we're a little bit more even, right? Like I don't want to just get out of it. I want to be able to fucking win.
Well, you know, in competition, there's so many different ways that people play the game. When you talk about being offensive, there's within jiu-jitsu competitions, there's a point system. So the ways that I've lost have been when an individual has gotten into a position, whether they're wrapped or literally like wrapped around my leg and they have my gi wrapped around something else, and they're maybe ahead by an advantage or they have one advantage and they hold that position for 2 or 2.5 minutes. I don't get tapped usually in competition. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't think I've been tapped in competition since I was a blue belt. The only times that I've lost in comp has been when somebody just gets a position where it's hard to like move and they're up by an advantage and they win by points. And that's a very frustrating thing. But at the end of the day, it's like, okay, I need to just learn how to get out of those positions, even though they're very stall tactic worthy. Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't like playing that game. Like I typically like to play guard, sweep, submit. I like doing jiu-jitsu. I don't like doing the stall game when a lot of people know how to, and it's, I can't I can't bag it or like crap on it because it's part of it. It's an aspect of a way people can win. It's a way of winning, but I don't think that's like really jujitsu.
But even playing guard is a way for you to get an offensive move in at some point.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like the reason why you pull guard or you do any guard is to either submit them while they're in your guard or sweep, get on top and submit them. You know what I mean? So there's a lot to it, but it's super fun.
So would you say that like trying to roll with an upper belt, even if you're not planning on competing or anything, like you're in the sport just for self-defense, for the exercise of it all?
Yeah.
My camera died. Does it even matter if should someone still seek that out?
I think so, because like an upper belt, number one, they'll tap you. They'll show you things as you guys are rolling. Mm-hmm. And the thing is like, I think that you shouldn't, if you do get tapped, and you'll get tapped a lot when you're initially starting jiu-jitsu, you need to take that opportunity to ask the person you're rolling with how that happened. Mm-hmm. Whenever I, like, if that ever happens, I still ask, what did you do there? Because you're going to actually understand or have an idea of maybe, okay, this is what I need to do so that doesn't happen again. And then when you learn how to do that, then they'll get you with something else. Then it'll be like, okay, this is what I need to do so that doesn't happen again or as often. But a lot of people, if they get tapped, they get frustrated, they get annoyed, and they don't ask questions. They just go to the next role without trying to figure out how you got fucked up. And then you'll just keep getting fucked up the same way, maybe because you're too prideful to ask that question, or you don't like looking stupid. And I don't give a fuck about looking stupid. You know what I mean? I really don't care about that. So I think that's helped a lot. Cassio actually mentioned that's something, because Uriah used to train with him back in the day. And that was something that Uriah was notorious for when he was starting jiu-jitsu. Every single time somebody would tap him, he would never let a roll skip without figuring out how he got tapped. And that's how he progressed so quickly, by asking questions. So ask some fucking questions.
How'd you get over the hump in the beginning? Like you mentioned to me before that you were pretty like sore and stuff in the beginning.
Oh yeah.
What do you think kept you going back? Like, what did you maybe like about it?
Well, I liked one of the big reasons I started doing it was because, like, you know, I played soccer. So when I got into focusing on bodybuilding and powerlifting after soccer ended, I did that for a few years, but then I realized like my body wasn't moving the way it used to, and I didn't have freedom of movement like I wanted. So at the time I was dating someone, and she was like, try jiu-jitsu. She looked it up, and she still does jiu-jitsu now, but she looked it up on the internet, and she's like, oh, this looks pretty cool. I was like, oh yeah, that looks cool. So I went to a class, and I really dug it, because everyone, there are people of different sizes, but people were moving in such variable ways. It wasn't a striking martial art, so I knew that this is something I could do for a long time. And one thing that was pretty intimidating about it is because I'd watch it, but I didn't know what the fuck was going on. You know what I mean? So when I started, for the first few months, and for actually for the first year, things just didn't make sense for a long time. But the cool thing is people are like, just stick with it, because things aren't going to make sense for a while. You just got to keep doing it, keep coming. And slowly your brain will start putting the pieces together. So I think that's one reason why people quit so quickly, because they expect it to click early on. Mm. And it's something that if you have a wrestling background, or maybe if you're just really gifted when it comes to movement, maybe it'll click for you in 3, 4, 5 months. But I think it took me over a year for like the movement for stuff to like click well. Mm. You know, certain things were making sense, but I look at other things and I'd be like, I don't know what the fuck is going on here. So it was more of a time and consistency thing.
Mm. How'd you get over the kind of the bumps and bruises of it, the pain of it?
I treated it just like the way we treat lifting. You know what I mean? Cause you're going to come across it. Something's going to happen. Mm. I think I was a blue belt when I had a meniscus surgery, and it happened with like a lifting thing. I did something with a squat and I felt my knee was like, oh no. And then I went to the hospital and they couldn't get me an MRI because, you know, they said, oh, we don't think you have anything wrong. I'm like, I'm pretty sure there's something wrong. And then something happened at jiu-jitsu, and then my meniscus tore. So I did that surgery and I was back training in about 6 weeks, but it's not something that like totally took me out of it. Like I'd still go to classes and watch so I could at least kind of absorb it somehow. And then I just started training again and just kind of kept consistent with it. All the time, little things happen here and there. Like recently, I told you guys, and you guys remember when I had that scapula injury, when my shoulder just crunched in and I couldn't lift my arm over my head. That took me out of rolling for a week, and then I was able to start rolling light the week after that, and I just kept working on it and got past it. But that type of shit happens. It's not going to always be super smooth. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll get certain injuries, you'll rehab it, and you'll learn the things that you need to do so it doesn't happen again. You're not going to get through any of this shit injury free. Right?
Did you have to go often to kind of get over the hump, or was it like you just committed to like 3 times a week? Or I mean, 3 times a week is fairly often, but
initially when I first started, I was like, okay, I'm going to go 4 times a week. And I learned very quickly I couldn't go 4 times a week. My body was just like, nah, it's too, it's way too much fatigue. So I was like, okay, let me try doing 2 times a week. And I was able to do 2 times a week pretty consistently with lifting. And then over time, as my body was getting used to the stress of it, I was like, okay, I'm going to try to go 3 times a week. And initially that was pretty stressful too, after I started going 3 times a week. But then I think after six or seven months, I was consistently going 4 times a week and some weeks 5. But now my body was kind of used to getting, my body was used to moving in that way, and it was used to that stimulus. Because when you're not, when you go from not doing any type of jujitsu to moving your body in all these ways and being stretched out in a bunch of different ways, you're going to feel super fucking sore. And it'd be ridiculous to think, unless you are gifted, not gifted, I don't like using that word. Unless you've had a wrestling background or you're pretty mobile or you have good movement capacity, your body is going to feel really wrecked for a good amount of time. Graham's feeling that right now. Mm-hmm. Every time he finishes jiu-jitsu, he's like, oh, my body feels like, it feels sore from the inside because you're doing all these things that you've literally never done before.
Yeah, it's dealing with your own body weight and then dealing with somebody else's forces too. Like, so it's, there's a lot of different shit going on. And then plus, you know, you guys, I mean, when you're starting, you don't always go from a standing position, but, right? When you're first starting,
you don't always
out,
go from a start. Yeah, yeah. You don't always go from a standing position, especially when you're starting out, because
there's
don't
ways
know.
To, there's ways to mitigate a lot of the stress of it. I mean, if you, the first 2 months that you go, if you're primarily stay on the ground,
yeah,
there's some ways to mitigate the stress, but you're still grappling with somebody else. And, there's no other way to do it. It's kind of like jumping. Like when you jump on top of something, like there's a point where you're going to have to apply a certain amount of force into the ground.
Yeah.
And if you're fighting with somebody else and they're trying to take position on you, you might be able to do light rolls and do all kinds of stuff for the most part, but there's going to be times where you got to go 100%.
Did you feel relaxed when you first started picking up running, like seriously picking up running? Were you pretty relaxed? How long did it take you to become a more relaxed runner?
It takes a while to, like, you know, relax while you're running, especially when you're going like a longer distance and you're trying to run continuously.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, my approach in the beginning was to like try to mitigate a lot of that. So I only ran for real short periods of time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I probably would look tight to people, but like I felt like I was running calmly.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was running loose. I was trying not to like frown and grit my teeth and stuff like that. And I would only run for like 15 seconds at a time, 30 yeah. seconds at a time,
mm-hmm.
then a minute at a time, or I would run from something to something else type thing. And, you know, it took a long time though. I remember, you know, I walked for the last like 10 years. I've been walking for a really long time. I did some walking where I would do weighted walks. So I'd have like a weight vest on, an 11-pound weight vest, a 20-pound weight vest, sometimes a 40-pound weight vest. I experimented with a bunch of different stuff like that. But then one day I was walking and it just felt good enough to run. And so I started to do run walks. And I remember after doing some run walks for even just a few months, I remember I would actually call it a walk jog because that's really what it was. It was walking intermittently jogging, and then it turned into jogging and intermittently walking, and then it turned into running and walking, and then it became running and jogging, and then now it's just running.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to like run 3 to 5 miles, which just means, you know, that I'm able to do it in like 9 minutes or something, 9 minute pace for each mile or something like that, you know.
Yeah,
that's like running. Like you're actually, you watch somebody run like a 9 minute mile, like they're moving pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty good pace. So but that took a long time. Like I, you know, probably been working on that for, when I say a long time, it might not sound like a long time, but when you're in it and you're doing it every day, it's a long time. So
yeah. And you were doing, you had pretty good frequency with the run mm-hmm. walks when you're doing those. Like you were doing yep. those like how many times a week?
I'd probably do those 3 or 4 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm running even more often than that. I try to just like run almost every day.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while, I'm like, it's probably not smart to run today. So mm-hmm. when I ran 12 miles a couple of days ago. When I did that, I was like, it's probably not, because I ended up like weird blood blister on my foot. I was just like, it's just not, I'll just walk. Like, it's not smart to run. So I didn't run the next day, but the day after that, I ran a little bit again. And, but yeah, it probably has only taken me about 8 months mm-hmm. to really like be able to run pretty well. But I think, you know, if I think about where I was coming from, I didn't have hardly any conditioning, but I was conditioned with a lot of lifting. And so that's not nothing, right? That's something I was conditioned with some strength. And, but it's just been a super long time since I've ran at all. Like the yeah. last time I ran was, high school, I guess, mm-hmm. you know, like, so many, many years. I'm going to be 46 coming up. So, fucking 30 years, like yeah. a couple decades without really running. Not that I didn't run at all, but I'm just saying, like, any sort of surmountable, serious running, any sort of consistent running, like none.
And, you know, the thing is like, I think that it takes the fact that you haven't done that since you were really young. If somebody was in that same situation, most people would like start doing it. And then it would be pretty hard in the beginning, or the runs would feel super uncomfortable, or there'd be certain pains in certain areas of the body that before they get over that hump, or before they get pretty decent, they'd probably say, I'm too big for this. I'm a muscular guy. This isn't for me. There's always going to be some way to figure out why this isn't for you, because you're not immediately pretty decent. You know what I mean? Like, you can't run for 6 minutes or even jog well for 6 minutes. It's not for me. Or my ankles hurt, my feet hurt. I'm too heavy for this. It's not for me, right? Rather than like you did run walks. You had a lower frequency. Then over time, you increased your frequency very slowly mm-hmm. until you're at a point now where like you're running in 100-something degree heat on most days. You usually mm-hmm. try to run during the hottest part of the day, and you're running for miles. But it's just slowly adjusting with all of the discomfort and all the little mini injuries that happen throughout it. One thing with jiu-jitsu,
there's a lot of little mini injuries. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember you saying with jiu-jitsu, like your feet and just like weird stuff that you don't even think about. Cause like you're on the ground a lot, you're on mm-hmm. your knees a lot. There's a lot of like bending and twisting, and you guys are barefoot. So of course the toes are going to be a big yep. factor in there, right?
Yeah, a lot of people notice that. I noticed that in the beginning too. Like, just my feet were sore.
Oh, and your hands, right? Some people really complain about the hands because you're grabbing the person's gi. Doesn't that hurt like a motherfucker, right?
Dog, it's the death gripping. Because like when you grab on somebody, usually because this is where the relaxing thing comes in. And I was curious for you, like how you were able to relax.
So we used to, to get the bench shirts on. It was like similar. Like you grab it, you know, the type of material is like a polyester.
Yeah.
And you squeeze and you get it like way into your fingers. And the guy like would squeeze the guy into the bench shirt, you know? Uh-huh. And man, when you let go, like your fingers hurt for like 20 seconds afterwards.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. And like for powerlifting, it's like you help someone get in their shirt and you help adjust it a couple times and you're done.
Uh-huh.
But in jiu-jitsu where, the guy could potentially tap you if you let go. I mean, it's not like life and death, but it fucking almost is life and death. The guy's going to choke your ass out.
Man.
That's got to be really crazy to like, you hold someone's wrist or arm in a certain position and you're like, all I need to do is be able to hold on to this for a longer period of time and I can get out of this, but then you can't, right? Your hand just probably goes dead at some point.
That's what most people notice in the beginning. One of the roughest things for most people isn't just like the grip, but because you're gripping so hard, like your forearm starts to get sore because you're death gripping everything because you don't know what the fuck you're doing. Mm. So you're not relaxed, you're death gripping, and then you're not breathing because now you're actually fighting somebody. So one of the biggest hurdles for a lot of people is learning how to breathe when somebody has them mounted, when somebody has their back, learning how to continue breathing when that happens, because what happens to most is when they're trying to produce some type of force, trying to get out of that position, they'll hold their breath and push rather than breathing the whole time.
It's a fucked sport though, because like you're sitting on the guy.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, yeah.
It's hard. Like somebody does something to you and you're like, yeah, like, you're like, how do I not make a face? And how do I not like start just like, you know, tightening up so much, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't even know what it is, but I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, but like neon belly, like how do you breathe through something like that when somebody's like being aggressive with you?
Like Belisa talked about, like you can still take full breaths when someone's in neon belly. They're just a little bit slower, I'd say. Like when somebody has me on neon belly and I'm feeling it, I'm just really breathing slow and making sure I'm breathing through that rather than holding my breath. Mm-hmm. Like I think that that's one thing that makes getting through jiu-jitsu easier for people is learning how to relax and learning how to breathe. Like when I got
knee on the inner thigh is nasty too.
Knee on the inner thigh?
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. Sometimes like someone will like kind of climb over you and put their knees in there and it like makes you squirm and then you're fucked.
Yeah, yeah. There are nice places to put your knee on people where your it just elbow. Like makes them squirm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. There's this guy, Jack. He has like prison jiu-jitsu. He'll do things where he'll like, he'll fucking just dig his elbow into certain parts of your body just to make you
He's got particularly sharp elbows too. He's probably sharpening them up before he goes to class.
Yeah, sharp everything. But the relaxation thing, I think with a lot of these different things, like with running, with jiu-jitsu, probably with boxing too, because when you think of like trying to throw a punch, a lot of guys who are muscle bound that are trying to throw punches, you're like, you know, they're using all their strength. But when we had Allah here and he was saying like, relax, calm it down, relax. That being able to be relaxed in these, in different martial arts and in running is one thing that when somebody's able to do that, it's like they've gotten to a different level. And I know I've rolled with people who like, they're blue belts and purple belts, but I'm still like, you haven't learned how to breathe and relax yet. That's why you're getting fucking gassed so easily. That's why you're getting wrecked, because everything for you is a fucking death grip.
Yeah, doing everything so intense too. And it's like, maybe you should find some ways to train where it's less intense. Maybe you need to train, maybe you yourself need to put out a little less effort so the other guy doesn't like, if you're going to match my level, right? You're going to match some of my effort. Like in your case, you're a lot, you know, you know jiu-jitsu, so you don't have to. But I'm just saying, if I was to crank it up, then you're going to crank it up just a bit, just to kind of like, right? And so I'm going to be fucking, my point is I'm going to be exhausted.
Yeah.
And then how do I learn from that? And how do I grow from that? I kind of can't because I'm going too hard. Like it's good for me to probably practice that here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would be good for some percentage of the training I'm imagining, but most of my training should probably be in that 70 to 80% range where I can get a good roll in and where I can actually learn, just like we do with lifting.
Yeah.
You have to be able to learn when you're lifting. And I used to tell people, like, if you can't think about the weight, then you're using too heavy of a weight.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to think, especially when you're starting out. When you're starting out, 100%, that's 100% true. If you can't think about the form and the technique and what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to execute it for all five sets of five, the weight's too heavy.
Yeah.
Normally what happens is you get that weight on your back and go, oh fuck, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do five reps. And then you're not sure if you can get through the next set, the next set, the next set. And you're just kind of crapping your pants the whole time rather than being able to do a coordinated effort with a good squat.
Pat Brodsky family, hope you guys are doing well. Now we love meat. We love to eat meat on this podcast. We've talked about it. Yeah. We talked about it a lot. That's why I partnered with Piedmontese, because they have amazing cuts of steak. Some that have a lot of fat, some that are a bit lower fat, but no matter what diet you're on, you can fit Piedmontese steak into your diet. It's fucking good. Andrew, how can they get it?
Yes, you guys got to head over to Piedmontese.com. If you guys know how to spell it, say it with me. That's Piedmontese.com. And at checkout, enter promo code POWER for 25% off your entire order. And if your order is $150 or more, you get free two-day shipping. Links to them down in the description as well as the podcast show notes. Let's get back to the podcast.
Dude, yeah. No, you know what's funny? When people hear like Bruce Lee talk about martial arts and he's like, be like water and all that shit, initially it sounds so weirdly esoteric and woo. You're like, what the fuck? But when, you know, when you're doing jiu-jitsu or when you're doing something, initially when you haven't done it a lot, the thing that you think is going to allow you to probably tap somebody is by barreling through that brick wall, going harder, exerting more effort. And it's weird that like that is, even if somebody's marginally better than you, that's not going to be probably the thing that really allows you to convincingly beat them. Oddly enough, like I found that it's relaxing and it's like, it's not meeting force with force. It's weird. And it sounds so odd, but it's like when the big movers for me in terms of allowing me to progress faster was nasal breathing perpetually through, because nasal breathing allowed me to stay calmer, right? When usually when people get in bad positions and you watch jiu-jitsu and you watch people get in bad positions, they usually start reverting to their mouth and their breathing usually starts to get faster and they usually start to gas out. But when I learned how to nasal breathe, that was a big thing because I was always now relaxed. Even when I was getting tapped, I was like, fuck, okay, yeah. So it's not like I immediately started tapping everybody, but I was able to now relax in every situation, even if I was in a bad one. That was one thing. And the second thing is, as I did that more, I was able to truly be truly relaxed when rolling. So for me, when I turn it up on somebody, it's not that I'm like turning up and exerting more force on them. It's that literally I kind of become lighter. I become quicker. I become more and more relaxed. Mm. And when somebody's rolling really hard against me, I find it easier to relax more when I'm rolling with them rather than trying to exert more force. It's a weird concept. I don't know how to explain it well. That's the best I can explain it. But what got me over that hump where it really starts to become enjoyable was when it really started becoming something that I could relax through, you know?
Have both of you guys done yoga before?
Very little, but yeah. I mean,
have you ever heard like the way a yoga instructor will like talk to you, like when they talk to you about like relaxing and they ask you to relax like everything, mm-hmm. but they mm-hmm. go through it step by step. Mm-hmm. They'll say, relax your left pinky toe, relax your right big toe, you know, relax mm-hmm. your ankles, relax your calves.
You're doing
relax. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They do all that, right? And you're not even recognizing that anything's even tight or flexed.
Yeah.
But when they say it, you're like, you know, you start to turn in like butter. You start to kind of like melt.
Yeah.
And these are helpful things for me when I'm running, you know. I'll try the techniques just like we talked about with lifting. It's a good idea to be at a percentage where you can think about what you're doing. It's a good idea to be at a pace where you can kind of think about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But I think that one of the worst places to be for running anyway is to try to think about being fast. Now that might be like down the road. Like if you're already Ben Johnson, then yeah, you just think of like being fucking quick and you just think of being fast and like, I'm just going to fucking smoke everybody. I don't care who's in this race. Maybe those are the thoughts that you have because it's second nature to you now and you got it down. But when you're newer, I think there's other things to hone in on and other things to focus in on, especially just because you're like, you're typically kind of going slow. So people ask me a lot of times about like my pace, like what's your pace? How many miles did you do? And I don't track anything. And there's many reasons why I don't track anything at the moment, but probably the biggest reason is just because I'm not very good at it yet. Mm. Like I want it, like if I start to have like metrics for this, I want it to kind of matter. Like I'm not at like some level where I need to have this fucking graphed out yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not there yet. I don't need a map and a plan and I just need to kind of like do what's available for the day. If it's available for me to go a little harder and go a little faster and I can push and I can go to a point where I'm forced to breathe, breathe in the nose and out the mouth. That's a good spot for me to be in for some runs. Other runs, I should be able to crank through the whole thing with nasal breathing. There might be some times where I go to the track and I work on doing, I'll just call it a run rather than a sprint, but I'll do like, you know, 400 meter runs. And I'll try to I'll actually check on my phone to kind of like see a time and then just be like, just keep a pace like that each time you go around. Give it 3-4 minutes rest. But I think, for me, if I try to think about going fast because I don't have a great skill set at the moment for sprints, that I'm most likely going to have some sort of injury. Mm. That's going to be a soft tissue injury, and I know I could pull that out of my head too, and say, "Hey, forget that. That's not going to happen to you." But it's just the reality of it. Like my body's tight. I'm still working on kind of decompressing my body from all the years of lifting. And it's just kind of where I'm at. But I'm better off thinking of like, oh, let's kick the leg back more. Like, let's kick the leg back behind the body more. Let's see if we can get the foot to be further away from the body. Or let's see if we can bring the knee up a little bit more. I've been looking into a lot of stuff from pose running. And so just kind of leaning forward and bringing the knee up and things like that. I can just think about form and technique and then what happens off of that. I end up being faster.
Yep.
Same thing, I'm sure, with jiu-jitsu, where you're like, wow, look at this. I relaxed. I did what coach fucking told me to do. I did what, you know, seven other guys told me this fucking the last 3 weeks in a row. I finally listened to him. I finally relaxed. Now I'm in a good position to finally tap this fucking guy out.
That's a fun little parallel, though, between what you're finding with running and what I found with jiu-jitsu, that like we're both pretty big, pretty strong individuals, right? Who have had a good background of weight training, you much so more than me. But the initial want is to potentially barrel through places where maybe your technique isn't there, right? So with running, it's like you're feeling something like, let me just fucking run through this. Let me just speed up because you have the muscle to do it. But you find when you do that, oh shit, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And initially when I was like developing a jiu-jitsu, like the big thing was, you know, you don't want to use a lot of strength to do things. You can get away with a lot of things being strong, but if you develop that way, you will... Guys that have way better technique than you or that are way smaller than you will absolutely eat you up because you've been relying on your brute force. Like you have to learn how to back off.
They get excited when they see the big guy in there.
They do because, you know, the trend is, and it's true that the big guy typically resorts to that when right. he gets in trouble. And when he resorts to it, a lot of times it works out. But it doesn't help his jiu-jitsu at all. So that's just what he's developing. So now when he comes across somebody who's just techniquing his ass, he doesn't know how to get out of it, right? So it's not that you need to exert more force, especially...
You need to get madder.
You get madder.
Yeah, get super mad.
Just fucking that. Hulk out, bro. You know what I
mean? That's got to get you somewhere.
Yeah, it'll get you... Yeah. No, there are some guys... But that's the thing. It's like when you roll with somebody like that, you can feel it. Like you can... Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that... They're easier to move. I'm not throwing any shade here, but this is what I felt when I rolled with Chad. When I rolled with Chad, after the match, I was very surprised about how easy it felt, but it was because like he was like a tense ball. Mm-hmm. It was very easy to move his body one way or the other because he was exerting so much force in one direction that I was like, I'm just going to sweep you this way and then I'll sweep you that way, right? So it's hard if you're already a muscle-bound person not to resort to just perpetually using that muscle. Mm. But when you learn how to like use technique in jiu-jitsu, first off, it gets way more fun. But then when you actually need to start laying some shit down and adding some of your force behind it, it should get scary. It should get really scary. But I wanted to know this from you. Because all your life you've lifted and you've been an athlete, but lifting was the thing that you really focused on. When somebody usually does something new, they quit early because they have a belief that they're not intrinsic, they don't have it, mm-hmm. right? So when a lot of bigger guys, and I think it's cool that we're seeing a lot of guys like yourself, Sam Okunola, I mean, there's Nick Bear, there's a lot of people that are coming from lifting to running and doing pretty well. But what made you actually stick with it and not have the belief that you're just not a good runner? Because I see this a lot when people start jiu-jitsu. They'll start and then they'll stop. Some people 3 months, some people right after they get their blue belt. And I'll ask why later. They're like, it's just really not for me. And maybe for some people, it's really not for them. But when I look at like how their development was, it's like they didn't get to that point where it was like it felt.
They weren't over the hump.
They weren't over that hump, right? So, because they thought that they should be better than they already are. That's one thing. Like you think you're supposed to be gifted or something, right? So why have you still stuck with running? Because you've gotten over a hump already.
Yeah.
But what allowed you to just stick with it?
You know, there's plenty of reasons to quit. There's plenty of reasons to stop because you don't get better at it right away. Mm-hmm. And it does take a lot of work. Fuck, man. I mean, I remember being out on like many runs and just being like, man, I still can't breathe that good. Are you serious? Like, this is crazy. And, you know, again, luckily I had like a lifting background to where, you know, I wasn't totally dying every time I ran. And luckily I built up a lot of sets and reps in the gym that trained my mind as well to where I know when I can push and I know kind of when I should. I also, yeah, I know when it's like, hey, this is not smart. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, don't fucking do that. Like, there's days where I've had to miss. There's days where I've had to stop. There's days where I've gone out on a run and I've literally had to stop and just be like, why don't you finish out the rest of this and just walk, you know, finish out the rest of this with a walk. Yep. And that's, that's fucking today, you know, hopefully you can start over tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the big key for me was just staying healthy so I can do it consistently enough so that I can get the breathing part down. If you're not breathing well, you're, when you're running and you're really out of breath, it's really frustrating and it's demoralizing. And I actually think that you're probably more apt to get hurt that way too, when you're not breathing well. I would imagine your body's a little stiffer. I'd imagine your you know, perceived effort is higher. You know, it's like at a 9 when it should be like probably at like a 7.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things I've learned. And more recently, I've been kind of developing this idea and this theory. And it's something I've always had while when I was lifting. I just didn't know how to articulate it. But I think for people that are new to anything, you can get so much out of like, you get so much out of some mediocre effort. Like your effort doesn't have to be fucking crazy. Your effort just needs to probably be above about 60%.
Yeah.
So that's an effort. Like mm-hmm. that's you getting out of bed and like you fucking showing up. But because you're new, like the gains are new and they're available to everybody. So if you can talk yourself into putting up a 6 out of 10 on the scoreboard, then you're doing a really good job. And can you do a 6 a couple times a week? If you can, most likely that 6 will represent something that you can stick with because you're going to be able to recover from it. And what that 6 will do is over time, the 6 will become a 7 and so on. And you're going to be able to push up your, you don't, you're not trying to push up your 100%. You're trying to push up like your 90 and 95% so that you can get to a point where you can train there every once in a while. Because once you can train in that zone, and once you can get there, once you can go to San Jose and roll with other people and see other people that are different belts and roll with black belts and roll with brown belts, and then you go, oh, I wonder, like, that's pretty interesting. I wonder how it would do with, like, the rest of the people in the state or even in this country or even in the world. Mm-hmm. Once you get yourself to being able to train in an 80 to, like, 90%-ish range where you can do it sort of easily and the recovery is effortless, what that will do for your brain is hard for me to put into words, but you'll feel like you got fucking launched to the moon. It will feel incredible. You'll never have felt anything like that before in your life.
Yeah,
because it can't be outsourced. You can't buy it. It's not a pill. It's not a bottle. It's not Mind Bowl. It's not fucking magic mushrooms. It's not, you can't get it anywhere. You have to go and get it yourself, and you do it through movement. That's why I'm so excited about all this. But like, once you feel that, then I'm like, all right, well, I don't know if this is too big of a statement, but I actually think I can be pretty good at running to a point where I think I could put up some numbers with running to where people are going to go, that's pretty wild. Like that's fucking, they're not just going to say, hey, that's good because he's old. That's good because it's going to actually be something where people are like, no, 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 that's like legit. Like, I know that I can run a 400 meter in under a minute. Like, it's going to take me a little bit of time, but yeah. I know that I can do that. I know that I'll be able to do a 6-minute mile. It's just going to take me some time. How mm-hmm. much time? I can't make any guarantees on that, but 2-3 years from now, I think I'll have it done already.
But the dope thing that you just said right there, though, is like 2-3 years from now, man, the giving yourself the time to actually achieve that, that's one thing. And
I'm in no rush.
You're not in a rush, man.
I don't want to go out and hurt myself. I'll be reduced to nothing.
Yeah. And that's one thing, you know, because initially, like maybe with anything, somebody tries to push pretty hard in the beginning and they hurt themselves. Maybe they hurt themselves a few times. They're like, oh, this is just dangerous. No, maybe you were pushing too hard, right? Maybe you were doing things a little bit too erratically. You didn't give yourself enough time to recover and you just kept bashing your head against a wall and thinking you could break through it. That's not necessarily the best way to go about it. But the big thing there is that you're giving yourself a time. And, you know, even if it doesn't happen in 2 to 3 years, number one, you're going to be way better 2 to 3 years than you are from now. Mm-hmm. And maybe you'll have a better gauge of like, if it's not three, this is where I am at year 3. Okay. Maybe I can see it happening at year 4, but there's this idea of this much time. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to a lot of this, especially as an adult, and you touched on something earlier, I'll let you mention it, but especially as an adult, you're too aware of how long something is taking for you to become somewhat competent. Mm-hmm. And because you're so aware that, wow, I'm 6 months in, I'm not really that good yet. I'm a year in, I'm not that good yet. you don't give yourself the time to become decent because you're thinking about how bad you are and how much better everybody else is.
You're trying to be great.
You're trying to be great. But when you're a kid, that thought never fucking occurs because when you're a kid, well, you might have some things you're decent at, but like you do something. Just like Kador said, I'm nine, coach.
Yeah, luckily for me, I started lifting when I was pretty young. I think the three of us got exposed to exercise, got exposed to some sort of sport or lifting like pretty young. And it was at least like in our family, we saw somebody else do it. We admired some people that were jacked. And we also, I think somewhere in our head is probably implanted in our head, like, oh, that's kind of like for older people. Like when you're not old, but like when you're 20 or 25, that's when you'll look like you really lift. Yes. You're not going to look like you really lift when you're 14 or 15 normally, right? Unless you're like fucking Arnold or something like that. But for the most part, like you kind of surrender to that fact and you know that you can get some biceps and your arms could be bigger than your buddies and your bench press could be a little stronger or your squat or something. You know some of that stuff. But I think you're also smart enough to kind of identify like, oh, the adults, like the professional bodybuilders are like 30 years old, you know, they're not 14. So I think you identify like that this is going to take a long time. And then also when you start something, when you're young, you know, a lot of kids, they do want to, they want to feel good when they do something. So they want to feel like they're doing a great job with it. Like a little kid, 8, 9 years old, they're going to say, hey, look, you know, look at me, look at me, dad, look at, you know, check this out. Check out the way I can spin in the air when I jump in the pool or, you know, and most of the time you go and you watch them and you're like, you didn't even spin, bro. Like that's fucking, you that's suck
shit,
at that.
Try again.
You turned your head.
Yeah. All you do is turn your head. You don't say that to a kid though. You're like, hey, that was great. And it feels good to them. You know, you're not saying like they're great at anything. You're just saying, hey, that's great. Like, that's cool. It looks like they're having fun, right? And they keep doing it over and over again, but you don't really understand or recognize that you're not that good at it because you're not an adult yet. When you're an adult is when you start to compare yourself to everybody else. And you're like, I can't jump the way that guy does. So then you don't barely even try. You're like, you're reserved now because somebody, you know, jumped up on top of a reverse hyperextension at their gym. You're not even going to try a box jump onto a 20-inch box. And it's like, well, maybe that guy has been practicing jumping for many years. Maybe it's Ben the Bounce, or maybe it's somebody that used to play some basketball or something like that. And they have a history of that. So I think when you're a kid, you can also identify the fact like, I'm just a kid. Like, you know, I didn't care. Like I don't really remember some of the beginnings of working out, but I do remember practicing with the bar. And I remember going into the gym, going into Mid-Hudson Bodybuilding in Poughkeepsie, New York, and putting 45s on each side of the bar and then having older guys come over and pull it off.
Yeah.
And they would rack it. And then I was like, oh, somebody took my weights and I put the 45 back on. Guy came right back over while I'm standing there. He took the 45s off. And I was like, am I doing something wrong or like, you know, what? And I was like, I'm just trying to bench press. He's like, you're going to start with 135. He's like, you're a kid. He's like, what do you lift? I was like, I don't know. Like, I think at the time I might have done 185 or something like that. He's like, you don't start with 135 when you can. He goes, there's a bunch of guys in here that bench 500. There's a couple guys in here that bench 550. Mm-hmm. He's like, we all always start with the bar.
Yeah.
You know, so start with the bar. And then they would see me lift, and then I would start to lift like shit because I'd put too much weight on. And again, they'd come over and take the weight off. And I was like, Can you just show me how to bench? Because I don't think I know what I'm doing. They're like, we were waiting for you to ask that question because you don't know what you're doing. You're benching like crap.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't let me do the reps and stuff. But I didn't care at a young age that I was doing it wrong. I was just excited to be doing it in the first place. And then I was grateful that those guys showed me kind of how to do it.
Dude, we underestimate what we can learn and get good at as an adult because there's so many things like there's this, you know, your brain is more plastic when you're younger, right? And kids pick things up faster. This is something that you hear perpetuated. And, you know, maybe there are aspects of it that are true. But to be perfectly honest, I really choose not to believe that because I think that as an adult, we're actually in a better position to pick up new things and learn new things if we... because we're smarter. Generally, you'd hope that you're smarter as an adult than a kid. Hopefully, you can learn to look for, to compare... right? And to look at, oh, okay, I can do this and I can do this to speed up my progress and I can do this. You can really do that well as an adult. Whereas a kid, you're just like, let me just try everything and get fucked up. But as an adult, you have the ability to actually course correct and learn.
I think as a kid, you don't remember the time. You don't remember how much time it took.
Yes, you don't remember how much time it took.
So it might seem like kids learn shit fast. Mm. But like kids, you know, they... I mean, look, if you're talking about like a language or something like that, that's a little bit more difficult because some people grow up with two languages in their household and they do it from a young age. But again, that's not as fast as you think either. Mm-hmm. It took just as long for the kid to learn Spanish as it did English.
Yeah.
It took the same amount of time.
And I think that's our perception as adults needs to change on what happens when we're learning new things. I truly think like most adults don't believe that they can learn new things well and quickly because they have this implanted belief that like...
It reminded me of a clip. Have you guys seen the clip with Kenny KO and Michael Hearn?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Let's see if we can... Have you seen it, Andrew?
I'm so curious.
I've seen one. I'm not sure if it's the one that...
It's not 100% related to what we're talking about, but yeah. O'Hearn like...
He kind of crushed him, right?
Yeah, I mean, they did. Neither guy got a chance to really explain exactly what they were talking about. So, but Kenny KO is like, it's a fact. When you get older, your testosterone levels go down. Mike's like, nope. He's like, it's not a fact. And he's like, no, it's a fact. Your testosterone level. So it's just, again, Mike didn't have an opportunity to really explain what he meant even further. But again, who the fuck cares about what he was going to explain or not explain? If he has that in his own head, because I think, so most people are associating it, right, with the testosterone levels being lower, I'm not going to be as active sexually, my dick's not going to be able to get as hard as often, I'm not going to be able to lift and hold the same amount of muscle mass and all that, but like, yeah. Mike's, we know Mike, like he's a fucking denier mm-hmm. of this stuff, regardless of what you think about whether he takes stuff or doesn't take mm-hmm. stuff, the guy's mindset, that's what I think people are missing with Michael Hearn, they're missing out on so much. There's a lot of fans that get it and that see it, but they're missing out on the mindset. This guy's mindset is fucking really powerful. Yeah,
I think this is the clip, so hopefully it is.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Well, no. I've never been natty, right? Yeah. Isn't that what they're saying?
A troll beats a troll.
What is that?
Okay, let's see who can troll harder.
You ready, go!
You're like the Homelander.
That's fucked.
Wow. Maybe all the trend in the closet, though, is kind of like...
That's what happened. The superpower was the trend, which is cool, and that's why I'm the one guy still doing it.
Are you actually on like TRT, though?
What would be the point, though?
Because men's hormone levels dip as they get older.
No, they don't.
Because you found the value of you.
No, no, because you guys say that. And so the idea...
No, that's medical science.
No, it is. Let me show you a guy that's at 740 at 58 years old.
Right, but what was his levels when he was 30?
Probably the same.
But were you natural when you were in your teens?
Well, how could I compete throughout my entire career doing drug tests and TV shows?
So is the legend, the type...
Yo.
So they went on a little bit further, and then he ended up bringing Mona over, like, you know, right after having a baby.
Yeah.
And he was just like, how come she's in better shape than you are? And she just had a baby, and, you know, she's natty too, and you're not. And like, so he kind of like went pretty hard on him, but
yeah,
it was pretty good.
Hey, why not? You know, why not have that mindset? What's it hurt? Does it hurt anything to be like Michael Hearn and just be like, I'm still going to show up to the gym at 4 a.m. every morning. I don't care about how old everybody thinks I am
mm-hmm.
or what people perceive, how I should act and how I should be because I'm in my early 50s.
Dude, we know.
Keep going to work.
Yeah, we know that the what you believe about certain things is going to affect, it can affect your hormones. It can affect the way you act. It can affect the way you go through life. And there's so many of these, like Kenny, he's nice and all. Greg Doucette, he's nice and all. And you know, all like these dudes, they're super nice. We talked about this mm-hmm, shit. Mm-hmm. I just think that they're making people have really weak mindsets because they're saying, oh, this is just scientifically true. Your testosterone's going to go down as you age, this and this and this. And when you're an adult, you're going to be so quick. This is just how we, I think, generally are, especially now. You're going to be very quick to try to figure out the reasons why you can't do a certain thing or the reasons why something is going to be difficult for you or the reasons why some guy is doing something better than you are currently. you're going to be quicker to believe and do that rather than trying to figure out the ways that you can actually really, how can I do that? How can I learn that? How can I speed up my progress? And when guys are saying the fastest way to speed up your progress is getting on some TRT, bro, you want your test up, get on some TRT, bro. You're going to be quicker to do that than quicker to try to figure out anything else as far as your lifestyle. I don't think it's necessarily bad that, you know, they're saying all of those things necessarily, even Kenny saying your test goes down as you age. But I know that I'm not going to act like that. Like, I know that the actions that I take every day is not going to be the actions of a guy whose testosterone is going down as he ages. I'm going to keep doing everything I'm doing, getting good sleep, working my ass off as far as in the gym, moving.
I'll give you an example. I don't believe in jet lag. I just don't believe in it. Yeah. I don't fucking buy into it.
Yeah.
Like, I understand. I think, okay, you traveled, so your sleep is off.
Uh-huh.
Your actual sleep is off, but you're not like fatigued because you traveled somewhere necessarily.
Yeah.
And then everyone's like, oh, the time's different and all this. You probably just missed, like, in the course of, you know, let's say 2 days, you're supposed to get about 16 hours of sleep. You're just probably a little shy of, you're probably like 14 hours or 12 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, your shit got a little disrupted. But because I don't believe in jet lag, I'm here the next day, you know, doing a podcast or mm-hmm. lifting. And a lot of times, even when I travel, I'm here the same day.
Yeah.
Like, I'll have traveled from, you know, I don't know, flying from somewhere, land here. And I'm like, oh, shit, it's only like 1 o'clock. I'm going to go to the gym. And yeah, okay, I am a little fatigued, but I'm only fatigued because I had to wake up super early. Mm-hmm. Not fatigued because of fucking jet lag.
Yeah. No. Dude, this is the thing, though. The things that you're saying right there, it's hard to try to convince somebody as far as science is concerned. You know, especially when you're super science-minded and you're super research-based, mm-hmm. a lot of your actions are then based off of what the research says.
You only sleep halfway when you're traveling and you're in a hotel, according to some of the sleep books.
Straight up, I really think a lot of that shit will make us weaker if we truly buy into it. I'm not saying that you should be oblivious and that you should try to be stupid, but I think there are some things where I honestly turn a blind eye to a lot of things because I'm just like, I don't believe it. I'm just going to keep doing this. I don't believe you. I don't care what your fucking reacher says. I don't believe you. I'm not going to allow myself to believe you because if I believe what you're saying, I'm going to be weaker.
So you don't believe in science and logic?
Apparently. Okay, yeah. Cool. I don't believe in science and logic.
I dig it.
Oh man.
Well, that was like when we had Ramsey on the show and he was talking about people doing a 360 dunk, you know, taking the ball in between their legs and fucking jamming it down. And then someone's like, well, they have poor movement patterns.
Yeah. What?
Poor movement patterns according to what?
Uh-huh.
According to some like study that showed you needed to walk this particular way or run this particular way or whatever.
I think we should obviously we should pay attention to these things, but we really need to be very, especially as adults, because as kids, you just go through life. You just do shit. And even Jesse Norris, mm-hmm. I think, is the prime example, because when he did his podcast with you, didn't he say that he was just training in the gym with his brother and he, for some reason they just like doing sets of 10 or 15? And when, like, everybody thought he was on drugs for a while, I think he actually ended up doing stuff later.
Right.
But he was doing some ridiculous shit when he was natty just because he was alone in his garage with his sibling training that way for years.
He did a 585 deadlift here with an axle bar for a set of 10.
Ouch.
Weighing 185 pounds, 190 pounds. I never seen anything like that in my life.
His training was just volume, volume, volume. Yeah. But like, if he was perpetually watching the fitness YouTube you have now, or a lot of content creators that talk about powerlifting, he'd be like, oh, if I do that, I'll get injured. If he truly believed that, he would have fucked himself up, but he was just training.
Right.
Right. So it's like, as an adult, you should pay attention, but then you should also just be like, fuck it.
Bilbo Swaggins, is that his name? What's his name?
No, that's
John Hack.
John Hack, there you go.
But what's his name on Instagram?
Bilbo Swaggins.
Swaggins. Yeah, he's unbelievable. And he just lifts as heavy as he can every time he goes. I mean, every week it's like 794, 826, 826 for two.
Yeah.
795 for three. Bench 600.
It's comical, dude.
Bench 585. You're like, what the fuck? What about our boy, too, Jeremy Avila?
Yeah.
He just smashed like an 820-something deadlift a couple days ago, right?
So here's John Hack.
Come on, John Hack. Would you please stop? It's just
it's 650 for how many?
It's just, I don't know. It's just gross.
And what did he do? He did something here. A little mishap. Okay.
No spotter or nothing. Oh, no,
he's about to mess up the mist.
I think the re-rack. Oh my god.
Okay, he saved himself.
But still.
He did that super easy.
There's a lot of people that would have got fucking murdered under 650 like that.
John Hack doesn't get enough. I mean, he gets credit in our sport, but like, I wish he was like known on a larger scale, larger level.
Yeah.
The strength that this guy has, what does he compete? 198 and 181. Here he's mentioned 584. I mean, this is just gross how strong he is. It's fucking awesome.
People are so annoyed during the podcast when like smooth. he was asked about his program and he was like, I really don't. I just kind of go in and have an idea of what I'm going to hit. And if I don't hit it, okay. If I fail it, okay.
I've never seen a video of him being like, I'm just going to do dumbbells today.
He's just I go put weight on the bar. Put a lot of it. I pick it up and I put it down.
I don't think he lets other people's performance or what other people's doing doesn't let that fuck with him.
No, because then he would pat himself on the back way too much if he did. I'm serious, because then he'd be like, fuck, 876. Damn. All right. I'm good. I don't have to do anything else. But
dude,
he literally
just bent down and picked that up. Like, that's
Let's watch it again.
That's as like hard as that was for him. He just is like, yeah, I'm going to bend down. And like, it's like he just dropped something and picked it up off the ground.
Oh, fuck. There's my keys.
Yeah.
What the fuck, dude? It's so sick also how it doesn't look like he's hyping. Yo, he's just like,
okay. He's just that strong.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And jacked. I did want to go back to what you were talking about, like as adults, like we don't like learn shit anymore or whatever. Like we're kind of stuck in our own ways and then that's that.
Yeah.
But one thing I wanted to point out is like when you are a kid, you don't really understand how some things do work. And as an adult, you've already learned how to learn. So just like a simple, like stupid thing. Like the other day, like somebody invited me to join a fantasy football league. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's not my thing. They're like, it's just for bragging rights. Like, you know, you watch football, so no big deal. And I'm like, dude, I don't know anything about fantasy football.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I've been in a position where I didn't know how to do something. And then I learned how, let me go to YouTube. And so it's like, I have a bunch of, like, I have so many resources now. You know?
Are you in a league?
So I don't even know yet. I haven't gotten the invite from the commissioner.
Join. People get people have a lot of fun with it.
People get way into it. Yeah.
But like, I'm just using that as a silly example as to like something new that I have no idea how to do. I know how to learn information on it. I just go to YouTube. But like as adults, like we already understand how to learn things. We just have to go back and do it. You know, as kids, we didn't. We just picked it up along the way.
I think another big problem, too, is like when they do try something, they might be stubborn, like as an adult. They might be stubborn to like really listening to people.
Yeah.
Or like let's say you're trying to get into lifting. Let's say you're trying to get into lifting and you've tried lifting several times and you don't understand it, like, man, people keep talking to me about it. They keep talking about bone density and how it's the best way to get in good shape and it's great for longevity and all this stuff's supposed to be good for your mind. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. I've tried it a bunch of times. Well, fucking hire a trainer. Hire a coach. Hire somebody to kind of show you how to do it. Be receptive to what they're showing you. For myself with running, I left out this part. This is super important, is that I was really open to trying a lot of different things with my running, and I still am because I'm still so new to it. But people keep asking, like, how are you running and how are your knees staying healthy or your ankles and stuff? Well, first of all, I don't buy into, like, you're too heavy to run. There's people that are 300 pounds that run every day. There's some big people out there that move really, really well. And so, I mean, I've seen every once in a while, I'll see somebody out running and they're like 6'4" or 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
They probably weigh a good 250 and they're out there, you know, running really well. So I'm not going to pigeonhole myself with that kind of stuff, but I'm also going to learn, if I'm going to run, I'm going to commit to running, then I'm not going to assume that I know how to run.
Yeah.
So I'm going to learn how to run.
Yeah.
That's how I've been able to stay healthy. I don't have any injuries. I feel amazing every time I run. I have some old injuries from powerlifting, some old things that are just tight or whatever, but I feel incredible. I can go and run every single day, anytime I want. I could run multiple times a day. I mean, there's been a bunch of different days where I'm like, I should go run again. And I have done that before. I've run twice in one day and things like that because I feel good. But take care of knowing how to execute whatever the thing is that you're going to try to do and be really open to examining it through YouTube or having a coach or having somebody help you, listening to a podcast about it, buying an ebook, whatever it might be.
There's also a really weird thing about like the way education is set up in terms of school. You get to 12th grade and then maybe you go to college. But like when you get to 12th grade, you know, it's like even if you do or maybe go to college, if you get out of college, I know a lot of people who haven't been doing anything new since they've gotten their job out of college. I think for a lot of times it's set up in a way, or maybe in the back of your mind, you're like, learning is kind of done, right? I've learned everything I need to learn to now be able to be successful in life, even though now we've learned, like people have been realizing how fucked that is in some cases, you know what I mean? But it's the learning thing needs to be lifelong. There's this book I was reading. I finished. It's called Successful Aging. It's by this guy, Daniel J. Levitin, Successful Aging. And he was talking about how individuals that are like professors or people who tend to not get Alzheimer's or who have diminished amounts of that are also people who keep working at stuff. Like they're continuing to learn new things, they're continuing to teach things, and that there's a higher occurrence of Alzheimer's and those types and dementia when people stop. You know, when they stop teaching or when they stop their job, they stop the thing that's keeping them cognitively, you know, going, engaged, and then boom, things start to regress, right? So as an adult and as you go into your senior years, that's like, I think we've talked about the whole retiring thing. I'm never going to retire. You know what I mean? Because I want to keep doing shit until I die. You know, the goal is to keep doing jujitsu until I die and all this shit, all this learning and stuff we're doing. I want to keep doing it because I know that number one, there's too much shit to try to learn. I'm never going to learn all of it. I'm never going to understand everything. But if I can keep myself engaged as an adult and trying new things and learning new things and getting good at new things, I'm just going to age better. You know, I really think it is. I think there is a bullshit aspect to the way people expect us to age because a lot of those statistics are based off of the way most people live. Most people do live in a certain way that causes them to have some type of decline in testosterone in their mind and their movement. But we're not doing that. We're doing new things for movement. We're learning new things all the time. We are having great lifestyles in terms of everything we do. We're going to fucking age differently. Get that book, Successful Aging. You guys will like it.
Did you ever get some distance between jiu-jitsu practices where you were like, oh, I got to suck it up and go again? Did you ever like have like a month or two off or something like that in the beginning?
Not in the beginning, no. If anything like that, that only ever happened when I had that surgery. And the only times where I maybe...
And you still got around it. And you still watched it on YouTube and stuff.
Yeah. And you remember when I had that. I was like, it was in the old gym and I was still fucking doing stuff on that leg to speed up my recovery so I can get back to it. So the only times I've ever like not gone for like a week is if like I knew, okay, I have this injury that I can't roll. So I just can't go this week. But I've never gone, I don't think I've ever gone more than a week without doing jiu-jitsu. And that... If that happens, that's rare. That's pretty fucking rare.
If you made a habit of going to the gym, don't stop. If you made a habit of running, don't stay. If you made a habit of going to jiu-jitsu, because when you stop, that initial startup again is a lot.
Yeah.
And almost like a walk run. Like once you learn how to run and you can run well enough, walking and running is actually harder. To me, I think it is. Like I don't like... I kind of get pissed that I have to stop, but some days that's just what I'm, some days I'm just like, this is what's kind of calling to me and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to push my runs to be faster and it would be wise for me to walk in between. So I will do it. But stopping during like a jog in particular to get that inertia to start up again, it kind of takes a lot. And after a while, you're kind of like, if you do it like a handful of times during like a 3 to 5 mile walk run, you get kind of, you guys, we've done it before. It's like kind of annoying.
Yeah.
And sometimes what happens too is like the the initial run, because you're just not used to it, mm-hmm. the initial run that you did in the beginning for the first, you know, 10 minutes on and off with the walk run, you start to feel it by the time you're finishing up 30 minutes later, like almost like you're sore or stiff from it rather than like loosened up from it.
Yeah.
What'll happen over time is like it'll become a lot easier and that it will just be a warm up to you. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll just be like, oh, I hear people, you guys probably heard runners say this before and you're like, what is this guy talking about? Like, yeah, I usually go out on the track. I run like 2 miles and I start my workout. And you're like, mm-hmm. guy ran 2 miles. I'd be dead if I can go home, you know? But that's when they start doing their 200s and their 400s or something like that. So if you are somebody that is getting involved in especially running, you just don't stop. Like you go on vacation, find somewhere to run. All you have access to is a treadmill. Figure out a way to fucking run, you know, it's snowing outside, whatever the situation is, figure out a way to get your heart rate up, even mm-hmm. if it's just on a elliptical or a bike or whatever. Do something that is similar to running, because to start it back up again, it would really, like, I'm lucky I haven't had to do that, but I know some people that have that try that, and I've seen it with the gym before too. It's like, oh, they come back around, they've been in for a couple of months, they hit the groove a little bit and then they're back out. And then every time they have to start back up again, it's harder. And every time they start back up again, they're heavier, unfortunately. And you're like, oh man, I'd love to just see this person just commit to like being here as much as they need to so that they can stay more connected to it. So don't ever get unfit from it.
Yeah, dude, that right there, that's a big deal, because it's like, I think when you start to become good at something and then something takes you out of it, I know COVID, I remember you were asking, there was a period that there was a stoppage. COVID, there was a while where mm-hmm. there was no rolling going on, right? So that was a few months. And when I went back, number one, I didn't feel as swift. I didn't feel as quick, right? But there are a lot of people who came back and then just left again because they came back and they weren't feeling as good as before they left, and they just kind of trickled off. And there's some people that haven't been back since COVID, right? So you got to be okay. Just like when people get injured or when you have surgery or, you know, coming off of a meet, you got to be okay with not feeling the greatest for a while when you're adapting to things again or your body's getting used to it. It's that, you know, I think one interesting thing is when you do something for a period of time, there's a few weeks when like maybe it feels really difficult. This is like you felt it in lifting when mm-hmm. there are a few weeks where the lifts are just way heavier. There's a few weeks in jiu-jitsu where, fuck, I'm just way more fatigued. And then you take a few days off, you come back, you're like, ooh, I feel good, right? There's this fatigue, you know, performance thing that continues to happen. It comes in waves. And you got to be okay with just continuing to move through that and just not necessarily stopping. It's probably not the best answer to just stop altogether.
Want to take us on out of here, Andrew?
Sure thing. Thank you, everybody, for checking out today's episode. Please, before you go, hit that like button and drop us a comment down below and subscribe if you guys are not subscribed already. And for you guys on the Spotify side, hopefully you're enjoying the new video up on there. We appreciate you guys that have been listening over there on Spotify. So please rate and review us while you guys are there as well. And follow the podcast at MB Power Project on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. My Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter is at I am Andrew Z. And Seema, where are you at?
Discord, we're going to be there soon. Head to the Discord in the description. When I say we're going to be there, we're going to be checking out the channels to see what kind of topics you guys have brought up. So join the Discord below in the description. At Seema Inning on Instagram and YouTube. At Seema Yin Yang on TikTok and Twitter. Mark?
I'm at Mark's Millie Bell. Strength is never weakness. Weakness is never strength. Catch you guys later.